Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
All right, we're going to continue our series talking about relationships. And this is not about sort of men and women and marriage. No, this is about us. This is about how we learn to live in relationship with other people. If you simply observe the world around you, you'll realize that there's a whole lot of space in the universe, and that God, as he designed this, could have done a lot of things. He could have given you your own planet, right? You realize that. He could have just made one planet for every human being. Instead, he decided to put 8 billion people on one rock in the middle of our solar system, or in the Milky Way galaxy. So there's some intentionality that we are to live together, that we are to sort of figure out how to get along. And what we end up doing is sort of thinking about, or sort of subtly believing that if you were more like me, if you believed like me and thought like me and whatever, then we would get along better. Or if you just liked me better, if I could please you more, then we'd get along. We have all this sort of unwritten rules, or this way in which we go about trying to understand relationships with each other. And the problem is, a lot of us really have never thought about or defined a relationship. We've been looking at the idea that this is essentially built on the foundation of this thing called love. We talked about this last week, this idea of love. And that primarily what we observe is that when we come out of the womb, as soon as we enter into this world, we are not interested in making other people's lives better. We come out and we start crying and we start demanding that someone love us, someone care for us, someone meet our needs. And I think it's a fair observation that we are built to be receivers. We're built to be receivers. We're designed to receive some force that brings life into our body, something that says to us, you matter and you're cared for, and that makes us feel better, and then we respond. And then what we learn is from that is we learn how to then sort of give that as well. And what we said last week is it appears as though we are built to be receivers of love and givers of love. And so we talked about this seems really easy, but yet why is it so hard? In fact, whenever you would ask people and just ask about relationships, what do you mean by relationships, or tell me about your relationships, what most people will do is start talking about the people they have relationships with. They'll start giving you names. They'll start saying things about other people like, oh, well, this is John, and he's easy to like or hard to like. Or they'll tell you something about a person. And a person is not a relationship. A person is a person. The thing that exists between you and them is what the relationship is. And most of us, if we're honest, don't have a definition of relationship. I want us to back way up and think about what is a relationship and how is it that we have this with another person? Because here's why. Everybody ends up with a definition of relationship. Everybody ends up with a view of what a relationship is supposed to be. And if it is undefined, it will get defined for you. And here's more than likely how it gets defined. Your relationships are defined by the people who make you feel like you want to feel. The people who make you feel good about yourself, the people who are nice to you, the people who like you, the people who get stuff done. And so every relationship really becomes about what you do for me, and that becomes the base definition of all our relationships. We look for this. We look for spouses like this. We look for friends like this. Whoever makes us feel the way we think we ought to feel, that's the people who get to be in our circles. Those are the people we have relationships with, and the purpose of relationships inevitably becomes you making me feel the way I want to feel. It's always this, and this is just what happens to us a long time. I mean, just test yourself. How many relationships do you have with people, right, who intentionally that make you feel like crud? Now, some of you do, but we're going to talk more about that in just a few minutes because there's a reason for that. But what I want us to be able to do is to back up into this and to think about what a relationship is without putting a name on it, without trying to figure out if it's good or bad, just to say, what is it? If it's intended, if we've been put on this planet and we're designed to live together and this way we live together is what relationships are, how do we define those connection points or those interactions, those relationships that we have with other people? So what I've said and what we said last week is that relationships or a relationship is a framework. It's a framework in which love gets expressed and it gets experienced. And so we've talked about this. A relationship isn't just about making you feel like you hope to feel or getting stuff done. A relationship is a framework in which love, this thing, gets expressed in your life towards them, and then it gets experienced in the context of that relationship that occurs, of those two or more people that happen. For love to be expressed and love to be experienced. And you start pushing on that, and you try to see, how does that impact all the interactions I have with people? And you'll begin to see this is a stark difference than what we typically think. So then you have to back up, you have to ask the question, relationships are a framework in which love is expressed and experienced, then what is love? And don't just jump to it, because this is what we'll say. We'll say, well, this person, yeah, I love this person, but they're hard to love, and people are easy to love and hard to love and whatever. And we sort of think about this, but we don't ever actually define love. Like, what is love actually? What is it? So we've tried, again, put some definitions to this. What we've said is that love is a force. Love is a force that comes out of something and it moves towards something else. There's a power to it. There's a push to it. There's a feel to it. It causes things to happen. It's a force. And this specific force we're talking about, love, specifically breathes worth and value into the life of another. Our definition is that love is a force that breathes life and value into the soul of another person. So that's what we're talking about. So let's kind of back up and look at this. And everybody goes, and I want to look at this, because people often go, they think about 1 Corinthians 13, and it's the love chapter. It's in the Bible. And most of you probably heard this, and where you heard it was is at a wedding. And so we have this idea, and it's always this picturesque, and there's always flowers, and there's always pretty violin music, and it's love is patient, love is kind. We sort of read it like this. Or it's on a cross stitch or some painting on our wall, or we get it in a greeting card. It says, love is patient. We open it up looking for the money. We forget to really read it for what it is. And oftentimes when we read this chapter, and I'm guilty of this. Oftentimes when I read this chapter, I'm reading it in the context of a marriage or a marriage ceremony or some sweet thing that I'm trying to look at that's beautiful. Instead of reading it as, what does this list mean for me and for you as we live normal day-to-day life? What does it mean for relationships? Listen to what it says in 1 Corinthians 13, and I want you to think about what it means to you. I don't want you to go through this message and go, man, I wish Bob were here. He needs to hear this message. I'm not talking to Bob. I'm talking to you, and I'm talking to me. Okay, I've already preached this message to myself and then done it twice. I don't like it, so I'm going to just let you share in my misery, and we're going to sort of get through this together, okay? Because we've got to understand this if we're really going to learn how to live in relationships with other people. 1 Corinthians 13 says this. It says, love is patient. And love is kind. People think of this. This is the way Paul defines love. This is not a definition of love. This is what love does. This is how you see and understand what love does. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor other people. Love never dishonors another human being. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rather it rejoices in the truth. Love always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always stays after it. It never, ever fails. This is a powerful thing to consider. And I sat down and began to reflect on this. And I realize that oftentimes I think about love in terms of how I give it to other people when I have to be patient. And I think about how annoying that is to have to be patient with other people. You ever felt like this, right? Whenever people, I have two girls. I learned a lot of patience in my family. My oldest daughter, when she was younger, we kind of nicknamed her Chrissy. She's 22 and married and has a real job and she's doing great now. But when she was younger, we nicknamed her Chrissy. And the reason we nicknamed her Chrissy is because Chrissy was short for Christmas, because she was slow as Christmas. We'd be going somewhere, hold on, I got to, and you're like, oh my gosh. And you were being patient with her. And I remember just kind of thinking about this, and you think about love is patient. That's an act of love on my part to her. But think about what it's like when someone is patient with you. Has anyone ever been patient with you? Not just in terms of waiting on you to go somewhere, but patient with you in the fact that you're not yet who you ought to be. have had to deal with you because maybe you were immature, or maybe you're a little hot-headed, or maybe you're a little scattered, or maybe you're not really sure what you want to do, or maybe this or maybe that, and someone just put up with you. They were patient with you. And I begin to think about it. When someone is patient with me, it's not arbitrary. It's actually designed, because love is patient. What it means is they're not just putting up with me, but rather they're demonstrating my value by being willing to tend to me, or to put up with me, or to help me, or to wait for me, or wait on me, to see in me what I can't see in myself. For someone to be patient with me means that they see things in me that they're willing to work toward, even when I don't know what that's going to look like. Love does not envy. Love doesn't envy. I love this because there's no reason for love to have to compare itself to anything else. It doesn't require admiration from anyone. It simply needs to be trusted and received. This is a beautiful thing. Love doesn't boast. It isn't proud. It is sufficient without parading itself around. It doesn't have to do that. If we do, if we turn love into that, it turns it into a spectacle, and then it becomes a force that makes me look good rather than being extended for the sake of another person, and that undermines its purpose and, in fact, its very existence. Love doesn't need to be a spectacle. It has no need to boast or to be self-serving, which is also why it's not self-seeking. It doesn't require attention. Love is not easily angered. I don't like this one so much because my anger is often justified, even righteous, if you know what I mean. I mean, really, is it too much trouble to use your dadgum blinkers? I mean, can't we all, like, figure this out? We have this sort of sense about us. Love holds no grudges. There's no karma with love. It's not what comes around goes around. Love does something much different. It's just a deep contentment with what is true. Do you see this list a little differently? A deep contentment with what is true. What a list. What a spectacular thing for us to believe and to hope. And you think, well, this is so easy. We should just all get on board with this and the whole world will be different, right? We could buy the world a Coke and the world would sing in perfect harmony and everything would be just fine, hunky-dory. But it doesn't work like that. Why? What happens to us? You see, we have to understand that you and I are first built as receivers. Now, you may be here and you're not sure what you believe, but I want you to consider this with me. I don't want you to dismiss this too quickly. But if you're first and foremost born as a receiver, your first task coming out of the womb is to look for something, to receive something, to trust something or someone. That's your first task. Can anyone be trusted? Can anyone be counted on with me? That's what you're asking. And we learn that yes and no through a lot of experiences. And the problem is we are broken, and we are broken in ways that we can't recover from without outside help. We're broken, and what was broken is our capacity to trust without hesitation. And here's what I mean. Think about your own life. As we get older, what we learn is a real subtle thing. We learn that the only person we can trust is ourselves. We got to take care of number one. We sort of learn this in a lot of ways because it happens and it gets reinforced over time. It's due to a lot of times the relationships that maybe we've had with other people. But ultimately, it's due to the fall. It's due to the fact that we are broken and sin has entered the world and sin breaks our capacity to trust without hesitation. There have been two books that have been hugely helpful in preparing for this series. One is by John Ortberg, and the name of the book, it's kind of the inspiration of the title of the series, but the book is called I Would Like You More If You Were More Like Me, and I agree. The second book is an old book. It's called The Safest Place on Earth by Larry Crabb. And in that book, Larry Crabb, he says these words. He says that when we begin this journey of distrust, or this brokenness begins to happen, he said the result is this, that we trust no one. Not fundamentally, we trust no one. And our deepest inclination is to seize from life what we need while protecting ourselves from its disappointments and threats. As soon as we realize that the person can't be trusted, we then begin to seize and grab and protect ourselves. You were made to be a receiver, and as soon as that gets broken, as soon as you realize you can't trust other people to receive what it is that you're looking for, something begins to change. And if you're not careful, you'll become a taker. He says that we trust no one, therefore we posture ourselves to receive. And this creates fear. What if this doesn't pan out? What if this doesn't happen? What if this person isn't safe? What if I can't depend on this? We become afraid, and here's what he continues. He says, and from the soil of fear, a deeply personal agenda develops. Now, I don't know what your agenda is. You may not know what your agenda is. Sometimes it's to prove yourself. Sometimes it's to make sure you're never going to be hurt again. Sometimes it's a lot of different things, but somehow out of this soil, out of this sense of distrust, you begin to feel that you need something. You start demanding something. That becomes your personal agenda, and you bring it into every relationship, and it happens to all of us. And the thing that is broken, what's really simple about this is not just about broken trust by people who did bad things to you. This is broken trust in the simplest of ways. It starts with is a simple question mark. Can I give myself to this person and not be harmed? Can I give myself to this person and get what I'm looking for? They don't have to do anything dastardly to you. They don't have to do anything undermining to you. All you have to have is a simple question mark, and you'll hesitate. The way I wrote this is that what happens is the framework for relationships requires trust without hesitation, and that's the problem. Most of us have very few places where we can trust without hesitation, or we can give of ourselves or receive from others without questioning or wondering, what are they really after? What are they really after? When your kids come in and say, man, Dad, you look really cool today, there's a question mark that happens, right? Question mark. And we hesitate, and as soon as you hesitate, you reveal distrust. As soon as that happens, we cannot share ourselves. We can't be helpful and contribute ourselves on behalf of other people with hesitation. We can't. We can't because we'll withhold something. We'll make them pay for something. We'll make them earn something. We can't live like this. We can't avail ourselves to other people. We can't give ourselves. We can't let ourselves be known by other people with question marks, with hesitation. Always wondering what they're going to do with the information they find out about us. Are they going to use it against us? Are they going to hold it against us? Are they going to use it and all of a sudden not like us anymore, not think we're worth anymore? My two questions for you with your homework last week were, number one is, who knows you? Do you have someone in your life who knows you? And I'm not just talking about your spouse. Your spouse is a good person to know you. That's a good thing. But I mean someone who lives with you day in and day out, maybe at work, a friend. Is there a name in that box? Who knows you? Do you have someone who knows what you want and what you hope for? Do you have someone who knows what you're disappointed in? Do you have someone who knows what you wanted so badly and it didn't happen? Or maybe some of the drives that you have now. Do you have someone who knows whether you like to escape from problems or whether you like to control people through them? Do you have someone who knows this stuff about you? That was question number one. There needs to be a name in that box. I've got like four names in those boxes in my own personal world because I need that. Do you have, and the second question was, how well do you avail yourself to other people? When someone asks you how you're doing, those people on that list, or when they ask you how you're doing, do you make them play games to figure out what's really going on? Do you pout? Do you kind of withhold? Do you cross your arms? I'm fine. Everything's fine. Or do you avail yourself to the people that care about you and that are around you and love you? This is a discipline. I have people that I meet with, and I see them infrequently, but our relationships are deep, and as soon as we're together, it's a complete availing without hesitation. Here I am. Here I am. Here's what's going on. I need you to see this. I need you to understand this. I need you to listen to this. I have people who do that with me, the same thing. You got to have people in your life like this. This is what relationships are. They're a place for you to experience love, even when you don't feel like you're worthy of it. They're a place for you to express it to people when they don't feel worthy of it. That's what relationships do. It's patient. It's kind. It doesn't need anything. It's content with the truth. We wind up in these relationships that are just chaos, and we create a whole different framework for ourselves, and that's what I want to talk about in the next few minutes we have together, and we're going to go really fast, so buckle your seatbelt. I've put this into two categories because really it is this idea of make you like me. A lot of times we think that relationships would be better if I could make you like me or if I could make you like me, and you get the difference there. One is if I can make you more like me, if I can make you think like me, feel like me, believe like me, then we would be best friends. I mean, is it any secret that all of us really believe deep down if everybody was just like us, the world would be a better place? Don't you believe that? I mean, I do. I don't intend to, but that's what I believe. And it's sort of inadvertent. Or the other thing, if that doesn't work so well, we start trying to figure out if we could just make people like us. If people were just pleased with us, then the world would be a better place. And this is what happens. We sort of get into these two categories, not to oversimplify, but I'm going to call the first category people pressers. People pressers. These are people who are always pressing on people to get them to think like them, to win arguments with them. It may be subtle, it may be overt, but it's always this sense, if I could just get you to believe and think like me, then the world would be better. And then other people, the other category is these are people pleasers. People pleasers. Now, what I am, if I had to put myself in one of these categories, I would like to be a presser, but I don't have enough guts. So I'm kind of a people pleaser. That's kind of where I would fall in this category. And you may want to test yourself where you are. What happens in these relationships, and Larry Crabb talks about this a lot, he gives us four categories. He gives us more, but I'm going to sum this up in four. What he says is basically, whenever you have pressers, people who press, relationships are marked by conflict. Category one is there's conflicted relationship, where it's always conflict. And what it is where you're always trying to force your way and someone's resisting that. And when someone resists that, sometimes they'll back down and they'll try to please you, but other times they'll bow up and they'll try to, and all of a sudden it's always chaos. It's always whose will is going to be better communicated or better argued or whatever than the other, and that's what decides how the relationship or the direction of the relationship goes. It's conflict, and it's always trying to press someone to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And some of you are in relationships where you're in a relationship with another conflicted person, and it's just headbutts all the time. These are people pressers. The second thing that happens in this is that if it doesn't really result in conflict, then we could talk about it as being cooperative. And being cooperative isn't bad. That's actually a good thing. But the problem is what happens in our relationships is we create win-win scenarios. You do your part, I'll do my part, and as long as we're doing our parts, we'll get along just fine. Y'all, there are marriages that are like this. Most of our business relations are like this. You do your part, I'll do my part, and we'll get along just fine. There are great reasons to get along together, to do great things together. That's an important thing. I have people in my life that we work well together and we do great things together, but that is not the basis of our relationship. We have to do other things that allow us to express and experience this force of love that breathes life. It's not just about getting along. It's not just about creating win-win situations. When this happens, what happens is one relationship is driven by agenda, the other is driven by mutual benefit. This is what creates codependency or abuse. Both of these things happen in the context of these relationships. You have to start looking and say, where are you at? In this series right here, this is always about my will and my way over anything else. That's what begins to drive in this. In these relationships, you can tell if this is you because your relationships are marked by tension and pressure. Now over here is what we have, and this the first part over here will be what we call congenial relationships. The people pleasers like congenial relationships. And again, being congenial isn't bad, but this is where we're not close enough to risk conflict. This is where you would rather keep the peace than talk about what needs to be talked about. You realize that if you know someone over a long period of time, you're going to realize that they're not perfect. There are a lot of people, they go, our relationship's fine, we don't talk about anything, and you just pretend like both of you are perfect, and that's how things work. We're just both perfect, and that's how we get along so well. What happens is you just don't actually talk about anything that's any deeper than that. And you don't risk enough. You're not close enough to risk telling someone. Do you realize that to withhold the truth from someone, if love has a deep contentment with the truth, and you withhold that, that's dishonoring to another person. To withhold something that someone needs to know is to dishonor them. And we don't have room for that in a lot of our relationships. I have people in my life who have told me things that were really difficult for me to hear. I need them to do that. I need for them to talk to me about things. I need for them to tell me when I'm doing things that may inadvertently harm someone or do something in ways that I didn't see coming. I need people in my life to do this. I have to avail myself in that. We spend so much of our time in these congenial relationships trying to hide and pretend and make nice everything that we overlook so many things that would allow for us to actually experience the kind of relationships that God intends for us to experience. A lot of people have built their whole lives thinking that if anyone else knew what was going on in my life, it'd be a disaster. And what I'll tell you what is the disaster is if no one else knows. That's the disaster. We have to be able to do this. And don't worry about, you know, sort of just trying to play nice. These relationships are marked by the absence of discomfort. We want everything at all costs is to be smoothed over and made nice. And the second thing in this is what Larry Crabb calls consoling relationships. And this is the idea that misery loves company. So suppose this happens, maybe it's in the workplace. You go and something happens between you and John or Bill or Sarah or Sue. And something happens and you're really mad about this, and the first thing you do is rather than going to John or Billy or Sarah or Sue and tell them that this went on with you, you go and you find some other people who don't like Bill and John and Sarah or Sue, right? And you get them and you become great friends. And you're all fired up and your relationships are deep. Why? Your relationships are about the people that you don't like. Does anybody have relationships and the basis of your relationships is that y'all dislike the same person? Or y'all have a problem with the same person, maybe a boss or maybe someone at work? And there's this whole group that hangs out. There are like entire clubs of this. We all love this because we hate this person. That's how our political system kind of works, right? We hate this person more than we like anything else, and we get together on this, and we create consoling relationships. We can just wallow in our misery. And this isn't helpful for experiencing and expressing the love that we're intended to have. So what is it that we do? I'll tell you the problem with this, and this is marked over here, by basically it's surface level. There's no depth to your relationships. And it's marked by basically chronic validation. Everybody is always validating everything that everybody wants to do. And you know that's not true. And we're just afraid. There is a third way. There is a third way for us to live. And that's what I want to talk about in the remaining 4 minutes and 11 seconds that I have. John chapter 17. It says this, and we read this last week. This is where Jesus is praying for us. It's this spectacular passage. I've shied away from it for years. I'm finally starting to immerse myself in this. My prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for all those who will believe in me because of their message. This is an incredible thing. Everybody who comes to believe in Jesus because of that initial push in the first century, Jesus is praying for us. He's praying for me. He's praying for you. And here's this prayer, that all of them may be one, just, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. Jesus prays, says, God, I want them to be one, just as you are in me and I am in you. They're sitting there, they're looking at each other, and there's this deep, abiding relationship that they have with each other, and Jesus is going, I want your people to be in on this. He's not talking about producing stuff. He's not talking about advancing stuff. He's talking about connecting with each other in a way that is deep and meaningful and real and whole and free. He says, I want them to be a part of this. So we've been sort of invited into this place. Now, because I'm theologically correct and I realize that the Father and the Son are not enough, I've got a third chair here for the Holy Spirit, okay? So you have to, it's not in that passage, it's in other places, but you get the idea. I just want to make sure I don't want to leave the Holy Spirit out. So there's this Trinity, this community in which God exists, and everything that we see was an expression of this love, of his character, of his essence throughout everything that we see. And he said, I want from the people, my people, the people that I made, to experience this. I want them to get into this and experience it. That's what he's saying in that prayer. I want, for just as we are together, I want them to be together, and I want them to be together with us. So then how do we do this? John chapter 4, verse 7. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. And everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Everyone who loves, everyone who has the capacity to give, everyone who has the capacity to give this force that breathes life and worth and value into other human beings, everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. But whoever does not love does not know God, because God himself is love. This is so huge. Whoever does not love does not know God. Do you want to know how you learn how to love other people? Get to know God. I'm going to kind of show you this and kind of illustrate this in a way that hopefully will help you. Because what happens to us is we forget some things. There are three observations about this passage. Number one, we didn't originate this. This was not our idea. It says that love comes from God, not from us. We came into this world as receivers. The picture of us as infants looking to our moms and our dads for this life, for this worth, for this sense of value is a reflection or a shadow of the way that you and I are built to receive love from the Father. We did not originate this. Number two, we are invited to participate. It is His idea to invite us into this circle. And number three is love requires God. Apart from Him, it doesn't exist. If this passage is true, everything else is an attempt. Everything else is an attempt. Love is a force that breathes life and worth into a soul. If you have not learned how to receive, you are more than likely going to begin to demand from other people. You're going to begin to manipulate other people to make them feel the way you think you deserve to feel. And if that doesn't work, you're going to start taking from them. This is the progression that happens to us. We go and spend enormous energy trying to prove our worth. For some of you, it's been in the businesses that you're trying to build. For some of you, it's been in the families that you're trying to always demonstrate or prove that you're worthy of this life or this admiration or this love from other people. You're always trying to prove yourself to other people. We go to great lengths to demonstrate our value. We want to make sure that we contribute. We want to make sure that all these things are good. But when we're trying to take, when we're trying to find a subtle way to keep from having to receiving this from other people, we're beginning to demand it from others in these subtle ways. We force and we grasp and we parade and we post all to see if anyone notices or sees or can love us. Are we worthy? Do we have value? And when you get into that mindset, I want to ask you a question. How in the world can you ever love another human being if you become obsessed with trying to earn it? It can't happen. It just can't happen. Our capacity to love others is squarely built on our capacity to receive love from God. Whoever loves knows God. You know how you know God? This is pretty profound. And Psalm 46:10, it says, to be still and know. You don't get to know God in a hurry. You don't get to know Him when you're in your car going, hey, God, can you show me this? Be still and know. This means to get alone and see, where are you at? This means to get alone and realize, is it always your will? Are you always driving your will? Are you just using other people because they're efficient and effective with you? Are you trying to play nice because you don't really want to rock the boat or do anything or pursue anything that's any deeper than what you already? Are you just there because sort of misery loves company? That's where we can all wallow together? Or is there real healing and growth and fulfillment and movement going on? To be still. There was a scientific experiment by some psychologists and psychiatrists a few years ago. What it is, they got all these subjects, these people, and they said, we're going to do a test and see how you are able to spend time with just your thoughts. And the challenge was, they gave them a button. They could produce an electric shock that would give them another benefit, or they could spend 15 minutes alone with just their thoughts. And so the test was, can you sit quietly for 15 minutes with just your thoughts without shocking yourself? And that was the deal. And they found out that 25% of women would shock themselves rather than spend time alone. 66% of men did this. Bap, 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 bap. They said that one man shocked himself 190 times in 15 minutes. The lesson was, we would rather punish ourselves than be alone with ourselves. We'd rather punish ourselves than to be still. You want to learn how to give yourself and avail yourself to other people. You want to learn how it is that you've been built as a receiver of love and then a giver of love. You want to learn what it means to breathe life in other people. What I would invite you to do is to be still and know that He is God and pull up a chair. Before you start trying to do things with other people, whoever does not love does not know God. Whoever does not love does not know God. If you're struggling in your relationship with other people, It's often not a people problem. It can be. We're talking more about that. But it starts with a receiving problem first. Do you realize what it goes on to say in that passage in 1 John? It says, this is love, not that you first loved us. This is what God is saying. Not that you first loved me, but that I loved you and I gave my son as a sacrifice to demonstrate that you are worthy and have value. The gospel, the fact that Jesus came and died and rose, is a demonstration of your worth and your value, and you cannot keep trying to prove it over and over and over and over and receive it. You got to be still and just sit in this circle and listen to them talk about you and tell you your worth and tell you your value. And you're saying, but you don't understand what I've done. He said, oh, I know everything you've done. Do you understand that the life that you're looking for is family? This starts here. It starts here. I know some of you came and you're like, man, I just wanted three simple ways to get along with difficult people. That's coming. But you're never going to figure out how to deal with difficult people by being a people pleaser or being a people presser. You're going to have to figure out how to receive a love that you can give without demand. And it's only going to be found in this circle. So be still and know, because whoever knows God, guess what? Loves others. You become a force that breathes worth and value into other people only after first you've allowed God to breathe worth and value into you. Let's pray together. Father, my prayer really echoes what your son said. God, let them get in this circle and hear us and feel us and believe us and trust us. You are patient and you are kind. God, there's a deep contentment in the truth, and you know us, and we can embrace that, that you always protect, that you always trust, you never fail. God, let us bask in that, to be still enough to receive that first. That we begin to find ourselves with the capacity to give it in ways that we really never imagined before. God, I ask that you would do that in us, that you would do that for us for the sake of what you want to do through us. And Father, I ask all of this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.